Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we catch up with the Tulsa Botanic Garden. What is the Tulsa Botanic Garden, you say? Well, it's the garden formerly known as the Oklahoma Centennial Botanical Garden, which is located northwest of the city, about a mile and a half from North 63rd West Avenue and 43rd Street North. It's located on 170 acres of land in the Osage Hills. This month, the gardens formally changed their name and are in the process of quietly fundraising for the first gardens in their 25-year master plan, which was unveiled at the end of 2012. My guest today is the president and CEO, Todd Lazang, who joined us today to talk about what's in the master plan and how it's likely to develop. Today, we hear about the Tulsa Botanic Garden on Studio Tulsa. Todd Lazang, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. It's good to be here.
Your organization, which was formerly known as the Oklahoma Centennial Botanical Garden, has recently changed its name to the Tulsa Botanic Garden. Now, what led to the name change?
Well, this is something we've been talking about for years. Goes back all the way to 2009 in terms of a real effort.
After the centennial was over.
After centennial. It was a very long name.
Yeah.
It was confusing to a lot of people. We had people tell us, well, centennial was a few years ago. Why are you using it? We had other people think we were in Oklahoma City because OCBG could have been Oklahoma City Botanical Garden. So it's just a long, cumbersome name.
So finally made the change. And you have a master plan in place. I know you did some plannings this spring, and
yes,
things are starting to take place. Now, people could still go to the Botanic Garden now, even though there's not a whole lot of formal gardens. You have a lot of beautiful natural area. For those who are not familiar with the site, tell us a little about the site.
Sure. We have 170 acres of land, and we have 2 miles of nature trails through the western portion, which is 100 or so acres of cross timbers forest, and basically tall grass prairie. It's not very tall this year or the last 2 years because of the drought. And then we have this 7-acre lake that we dug through the gift from the Oklahoma Centennial Commission. That was completed in 2008, and that's where we're working to develop 60 acres of gardens over the next 25 years around.
Yeah. And the master plan is about 25 years in length. Now, you've been involved with a number of botanic gardens over the years. How long does it take from, you know, groundbreaking to a place where it's a mature garden? I mean, how long does that take? Just in nature, usually.
Yeah, well, it can take a number of years. I will say we are actually on schedule. If you look at a lot of other gardens that started from scratch and where they are at, and you go and study their history, we're right where we should be. I know some people are saying it's taking so long, but it just takes a while to build these types of things. In terms of how... when will it be mature? Well, it depends on what you call mature. Having robust gardens and programs and facilities, et cetera, takes time. But also, you could look at it from the biological standpoint. How long does it take your tree to get mature? 50 years, 100 years? Things do grow slower here, so it'll take a while. But in 5 to 10 years, people won't even recognize it. It's going to be so amazing based on this plan that we have right now.
Tell us a little bit about the site. The site is northwest of Tulsa. It's northwest of Gilcrease Museum. It's just further out towards Osage County, right?
We are in Osage County. We are in the fence line for the city of Tulsa, so one day we'll be in the city limits. So we're 8 miles northwest of downtown, yes, and about 3-4 miles from the Gilcrease Museum. And we're close to Post Oak Lodge, so if you've ever been out there up in the Cross Timbers, Post Oak Lodge is our neighbor. We are pretty easy to get to if you go north downtown on the Tisdale and you exit on the new Gilcrease extension. It takes you right down to 41st Street. You hang a right, and then about a mile and a half, we're on the left. You'll see our new road that we developed 4 years ago.
And of course, this is one of the things that in building this property from scratch, you've had no infrastructure. You had to build a road. You had to build, you know, and I think that's probably unseen cost to people who are supporting the Botanic Garden.
It is a huge unseen cost, and you're right. That's what we're working on right now. We are building right now a 2.5 mile long, 12-inch water main with the city of Tulsa. We brought $1.25 million to the table. City of Tulsa was interested in building another loop for their system to meet anticipated growth in the future. And so we turned that money over to them because we're in the garden business, not the water main business. And so they can do that a lot better than us. And they're working on it. It's 60% done.
All right. And I assume you have a lake, but you know, Botanic Garden uses tremendous amounts of water, don't they?
They can. It's critical we have city water in the sense of, you know, we have a visitor center, you know, we like to drink water, and it'd be nice not to have to buy plastic bottled water all the time. But yes, we'll use some for the gardens, but I will say my goal is that this botanic garden becomes the statewide leader, if not a regional leader, in water conservation and modeling of water use for landscapes. And there's no reason we can't do it. We've got the educational partners behind us in OU, OSU, TU, and TCC. We've got other contacts even out of state, and we can figure this out so that we can come up with a low-impact water footprint for the botanical garden.
Now you're thinking like a water capture system, so passive watering.
Absolutely.
And in Oklahoma, all of our water comes at one time of the year, two times of the year maybe, and
sure,
capturing that for use in the summer?
Yes. It could be water capture. You've probably heard of rain gardens. They sometimes have called them bioswales. So using things like that to, say, capture water coming off of our parking lots, filter out some of the pollutants that come from our automobiles, redirect that water to our lake, but also challenging our irrigation guys so that we can not throw any water in the air. So, you know, whenever you see a sprinkler system, what is it doing? It's throwing water in the air, and some of that water evaporates or, in our climate, can blow away. And so we need to look at sub-irrigation or drip irrigation, where you actually have the irrigation on the ground or underground. And I'm not going to say it's going to be easy. It's not necessarily as proven a technology, but I think it's something we need to do. It's the right thing to do. And if the Israelis can figure it out, because they're leaders in water technology, irrigation technology, then we certainly can use that to our benefit here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the master plan. You announced your master plan at the end of 2012, and of course, that's a busy time of year. Perhaps some folks missed the announcement, and you spent most of all last year developing a master plan for the garden. Can you talk a little bit about how you developed the master plan and what's in it?
Sure, absolutely. The board was really excited about developing initially the children's garden plan. And we ended up talking to several people, firms, I should say, landscape design firms that work with botanical gardens, the botanical garden community. And we settled on two that we interviewed who were fabulous. One was out of Colorado, another was out of Dallas. And we ended up working with the guys out of Dallas. And we liked their work so much in the children's garden, we said, we want to take a fresh look at our plan on the whole scale, and we ended up hiring them to do this master plan, and we unveiled it on 12-12-12 last year, and we think it's fabulous.
It really is. It's, I don't know how many acres, but it's basically a development around your lake site all the way around, so eventually visitors will be walking around the lake, which I guess they can do with a nature trail now, and it'll be fully developed gardens. And it looks like the way it's set up, you have a very systematic way of developing the garden. You start at one end and basically work your way around the garden in it. Now, where is the children's garden right now? Because that's the first garden that's been developed. Have you done your first set of plantings?
We've taken the planning for the children's garden further than anything else. We, when you're doing planning work for something like this, you have conceptual design followed by schematic design followed by design development. The children's garden, we've already done conceptual and schematic design, so we're about ready to roll in design development. That basically just means, DD means you're going to do all the little things like what type of surface are you going to use for your sidewalks, which plants are we going to use, how deep are the planting beds, all the details, the stuff that really can occupy a lot of time. And then what comes out of design development is construction drawings. Mm-hmm. So we are at the stage of getting ready to trigger design development. We haven't done it just yet, and it'll take a few months, about 6 months to do, but that is our next step for the children's garden.
Yeah, and I know you've done some plantings this year, right?
Yes, what we decided to do is, you know, we have the 25-year master plan, and we have a 3-year goal for developing 3 major gardens in our next major phase of development, but no one wants to wait 25 years, and we don't even want to wait 3, right? So in the immediate term for this year, we are doing plantings around the lake so people can come and see more and more. And we have our 2 miles of nature trails, and now we have the 3/4 mile hike or walk, around the lake. But we've put in almost 1,500 plants. That's anything from some shrub roses to perennials, flowering perennials, to a lot of other flowering shrubs, and even a few tropicals, not too many, but enough to just give us that kind of bang of color that we want people to see.
Well, let's go through the master plan, if you will. You mentioned the children's garden is probably the furthest along.
Sure.
But I was sort of looking at some of them. You mentioned sort of a three-year plan to get three major gardens, and I know you're quietly raising money for that at this particular point, but can you talk about the gardens you're actively raising money for and what sort of amenities will they have?
Sure. We are we're working to develop three gardens that are situated on the north side of the lake, more or less, and they would be closest to the current visitor center that we have right now. The reason we're doing that is just for proximity. We have other gardens that are on the south side of the lake, but that's a fair walk for people, so we figured we'd develop the north ones first. It is going to include the children's garden, which is going to be this wonderland environment in which we will have the right type of settings for children to learn as they learn, because they don't learn by reading interpretive signage like you and I might. They learn by play and experiential-based learning.
Give us a sense of some of the features of that children's garden.
It's got all kinds of cool things. It's everything from kind of using a natural stream valley to accentuate it so that through recirculating pumps and all of that, so that we can have water elements for kids to look at tadpoles and understand, you know, ecological processes, all the way to a flowering prairie, which on the one hand we could talk about pollination, on the other hand we can talk about plant diversity, but on the other hand it's kind of a maze where kids will be able to kind of go through. The moms will always have a good view, we thought of that too. And you know, the cardinal rule of children's gardens is thou shalt only have one exit, and you know, you don't want multiple exits, right? You don't want to lose the kids, so we've got that covered too. But and it's going to have some artistic pieces in the prairie. We want to do these animal spirits, so we might have a buffalo overlooking the prairie, some type of artistic statue. We could have prairie dogs or armadillos. We're still figuring out which one we'll actually do. And we're going to have at the head of the stream, my favorite feature is this looks like a head, a sculpted head, a giant head, and it's called the Spring Giant. And the stream appears to come forth from his mouth. Mm-hmm. And you can walk into the mouth by stepping on the tongue. And he has a crawfish for his nose and fish for the eyebrows. And anyhow, when you walk in, he drips saliva on you, right? So isn't that going to be fun? Because kids can have the gross out factor. So we're having fun with
It sounds like it's going to be very well designed for kids to have a really good time.
Absolutely.
And the other two gardens would be the ornamental garden and the aquatic garden.
Yes.
Explain the ornamental.
Sure.
Just a wide variety. Will it be sort of didactic, so you sort of see different types of ornamental plantings, or will it be more just for aesthetic beauty?
It'll be our main flower showcase, I'll call it. The working name of ornamental garden may change. We're still vetting out some other potential names. But it'll be on the west side of the lake where there's a pretty good hill that goes up actually to our persimmon grove. And so we're going to terrace it and bring in maybe some Art Deco elements in the stonework that relate to Tulsa's rich architectural history. And it's kind of the adult equivalent for our children's garden. So it's going to have a lot of flowers. It's going to have terraces and balustrades. And it's going to have three main recirculating water features, which are called rills or runnels. It's basically a narrow channel of water developed by the Persians, because if you keep the channel narrow, you don't lose a lot of water to evaporation. But it creates the sensation of water being nearby. So it's going to be really dynamic with tons of flowering plants and well-designed for maximum impact.
It looks like almost there's some waterfall walls in there, too.
Yes, the uppermost level, which may come a little later, it has two still pools and then a water well where the water appears to be cascading down these walls and two pavilions. But I think what we'll do for now is probably build the other terraces down the hill first, and it will save that last terrace for later. But we're still figuring all of that out right now.
And the aquatic garden is the other part of this first phase, right?
Yeah. If you look at the lake, you can do it on Google Earth, you'll see that the northeastern part of the lake is kind of a circle. So we were kind of staring at it one day with all of our designers in tow, and we're like, it is circular. And so one of them said, let's make it a circle. So with minor land sculpting, we can make it a perfect circle. We can put in a weir, which is a water, you know, elevation control device, and then we can pump out of the main body of the lake up into the aquatic garden portion of the lake, and that way it will always stay full. It will never fluctuate. And then by just clever use of cut and fill all right near the shore, we can create these shelves underwater at the right depth so we can grow water lilies our lotuses or Louisiana irises or whatever. I was just talking to the Green Country Water Gardening Society about this. They are so excited, you know, but people really love water gardening, and we've got this big lake, so let's use part of it for it. So it's going to be the aquatic garden. We'll probably come up with a better name. Mm-hmm. We may have a viewing pavilion on one side where you can get up close and maybe at level to see the flowers, so we're working on that too.
Now, as we look at the overall design, I mean, the gardens, various gardens go around the lake. There's also a little outcropping into the lake, mm-hmm. and I know part of the design calls for the building of a carry-on tower.
Yeah.
And I know one of the firms that we worked with worked at Lake Wales, Florida, the Bock Tower, which is, this is one of the most peaceful gardens mm-hmm. in the world. It's on the high spot of the Florida Peninsula.
Right.
So it's maybe 200 feet above sea level, but it's about 100 feet over everything else.
Yeah.
And they have this beautiful, beautiful carry-on that plays music through the day. And it's just one of the most peaceful locales in the country, as far as I'm concerned. And you're going to try to do a little garden there and carillon, too.
Yes. We feel that music and sound is very important. We have the lake. We're in a bowl-shaped area. And so the idea of having a carillon or a bell tower is just a wonderful thing. And if we can come anywhere near close to what Bock Tower has achieved, if you're ever in Orlando, please go to Bock Tower Gardens, then we will be just a destination for throngs of visitors. But the idea is that, yeah, you could hear these beautiful melodies playing out over the lake, and there's some engineering required to pace. We don't even know how tall we want to make it yet, because it's all about, you know, how much money do you want to spend really on
right.
something like that. And,
right.
you know, we want to do something nice, but it doesn't have to be grand. So that'll come at a later point, but I think it's going to be something people really enjoy.
Now, you'll also be showcasing Oklahoma plants. There'll be in the 25-year plan, there'll be Oklahoma gardens, which I assume will be demonstration gardens, the best varieties to be grown around here.
Actually, that, Rich, is our native plant garden. We have a separate area called the Inspiration Gardens that'll be trial and demonstration. But in the short term, we're already using native plants in our plantings, and we're going to continue to enhance that. As soon as we get our water line done, we're going to start a small nursery so we can grow some things from seed that we just can't do right now. And so the Oklahoma gardens will be the native plants of the entire state, all the way from the Panhandle to McCurtain County to the Wichitas and the Ozarks. And we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to see if we can grow some, you know, chaparral vegetation from, you know, up in the Panhandle, or I don't know. We're going to really
try. Or bald cypresses down in the southeast.
Yeah, we're going to definitely grow some bald cypresses. And one day I want to be able to have a plant collection program where we can go to all the four corners, or five corners, I guess, of the state, and collect some of these plants responsibly. We're not going to be digging stuff in mass. You know, we'll get permits and all of that. So, yeah, we really want to be cutting edge. I don't think this native plant garden is going to be at the 25th year. I think it's going to be a lot sooner than that when we get to it.
My guest today is Todd Lazang, the president and CEO of the newly renamed Tulsa Botanic Garden, which is up on the northwest side of the city. They're actively fundraising for the first three sections of their gardens, and hoping to, I guess you're planning on starting planting like fall or early next spring, you
think? We're already planting. We've been planting for 2 months. But.
Right, yeah. But the first section of the children's garden is probably, I mean, you're maybe a year away from maybe?
Yeah, we're it's in the fundraising timetable right now. So, you know, that all depends on how the fundraising goes. It could be tomorrow or it could be a year, but we're working on it.
Yeah. And the 25-year master plan was unveiled at the end of last year. You should go to their website, which is it Tulsa Botanic Garden or is it still OCBG?
We're using both, but the new site will be tulsabotanic.org, but you can still use OCBG.org.
Yeah. And one of the things I noticed, there's a couple of features that a lot of botanic gardens use. There will be a chapel,
yes.
which most botanic gardens find that that's a wonderful setting for a wedding, and so you're going to have a chapel for that.
Right.
We also have an amphitheater with a great lawn, which I think that's a cool idea.
Well, we have these beautiful views. We need to take advantage of them and have events out there, like concert series or the like, and kite flyings. We had that earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Anything we can do in open spaces.
Now, will the Botanic Garden eventually get into research at some point in its future?
Yes. In fact, we already are doing research in terms of collaborating with our educational partners. We actually had someone call this week, and they were interested in a salamander study of the native salamanders on the site. And we've had OU botanists come and look at all of the plants native to the site. OSU botanists also worked on that. But one day, It could be this plant collection program. It could be any of a number of things. It could be horticultural therapy, where we're working with the medical community here in Tulsa about psychological benefits of having plants around people who are, in hospital care or aftercare. So there's so many opportunities, and we're definitely going to be working on those.
A good part of this site is still going to remain natural because you are sort of on the cross in the Cross Timbers area, which is. It takes a little bit to love, but once you get in there, you go, wow, this is a really interesting little minor ecosystem, and it's, of course, the transition from the woods of the east to the prairies of the west, and so you're going to leave a lot of that natural, but you're going to, I think this is happening later in the master plan, but eventually you're going to build some formal gardens around at least a part of those Cross Timbers, and it'll be Asian themed. It'll be Asian gardens, which I assume will involve the sand areas where, you know, you're doing drawings
rake
in the
gravel.
Sand and the rake gravel and all that sort of stuff, and just sort of that attention to detail that the Asian gardens usually have.
Yeah, we're going to have 100 acres that are going to be left alone. But close to one side of the natural areas, we want to do an Asian garden because there's always been an interest in it. And it'll be an Oklahoma take on an Asian garden. I mean, we can grow some Japanese maples, but, you know, we're not Portland, Oregon, right? We're not Seattle. So we have to kind of take it with our own spirit. And it'll probably actually use a number of Oklahoma natives in a Japanese garden designed way. I think it's going to be fun. It's not the first one we're going to build, but there's definitely plan for an Asian garden. I don't know if it's Chinese. I don't know if it's Japanese or both, or if it's Persian or you know, Indian. I mean, the world's kind of our apple on that one, but there's a spot on the map, on the master plan for that.
You also have edible gardens, so I assume you're going to be doing vegetables and doing, I assume, the same sort of thing about best practices for vegetables around here?
Yes. I wish we could build that one today. It is properly sited on the master plan on the south side of the lake because we're going to use our spillway to an ugly-looking feature of the lake. We're going to turn it into an asset. So since it is on the south side of the lake, we can't develop it now. But, yeah, we're gonna be right there. You know, we're seeing so much movements right now with locavores and farmers markets and, you know, where's your food come from? And you know, educating children about food does not come from a hand that appears out of a window at a drive-thru, right? And so we're going to be there. I want us to have one of the most prominent herb gardens in a 3 or 4 state region because we have so much interest with all the herb societies here, vegetables, heirloom fruits, you name it. It's going to be a major garden. I think it's like 3 acres. There's room to, if we wanted, to make it even bigger because we have more land, but 3 acres is plenty and it will generate a lot of produce. The food banks and food kitchens will be very happy when we get that thing going because it will generate so much produce.
All right. It sounds like it's a great concept. All it needs is just a little bit of money, right?
Just a little, yeah. Well, you know, we've had so much support already, and we're talking to people right now, and our board is so dedicated, and I feel confident we'll be able to get this next phase going without any delay.
My guest today is Todd Lazang, the president and CEO of the newly renamed Tulsa Botanic Garden, which was formerly the Oklahoma Centennial Botanical Garden, and they just recently changed their name. There are programs going on every weekend. I assume once you have the 3 gardens up and running after the first initial fundraising, then this will be, right now it's you're only open, what, on Saturdays pretty much?
Yeah, we're open on Saturdays because we have to run a generator for our electricity and we truck in water for the bathrooms and all. But we're working to move the office there at some point within the next year. And once we're there, we're going to open more during the weekdays because we'll be there.
And then once the gardens are open, you'll be open.
Absolutely.
Every day.
In this 3-year timetable, at the end of that 3 years, we're going to have these 3 gardens open. Maybe the last one would still be under construction, but we will be open in a major way and we'll have more staff. It'll be a big deal.
Yeah. Well, for those who are saying, "Well, botanic garden," you know, I don't really like.
Yeah, what is
I don't
that?
Like, you know, explain the allure of a really beautiful botanic garden.
Well, when you have the chance to visit some of the established botanic gardens in our area, which could be all the way from Dallas Arboretum and Botanical Garden, or Missouri Botanical Garden in St. Louis, or Denver Botanic in Denver. You know, and you go there, and not all of those are very old. Missouri Botanic is old, but the other two are like, in terms of their modern incarnation, they're 30 years or so. Mm-hmm. Dallas is actually 30, period. But you just see the magic of what they've achieved and this urban oasis that they've created on the one hand, and then you see all of these, or you hear about all of these programs that they're doing where they're bringing school children through, or they're working with people in hospitals through horticultural therapy, or any of a number of things, stuff that you just can't imagine. They have program. They a lot of these gardens have places for people who are blind, so you have interpretation to help people who actually can't see, but they're experiencing the plant world through other senses.
Yeah.
It's the world's really just changes for you when you can see the breadth of the plant community and understand how important it is to our daily lives, because we really literally depend upon plants.
And then those you mentioned, they're pretty much urban.
Urban
botanic gardens. There's another sense entirely when you go to one on the edge of a city or
yes.
just beyond the city limits like you have here. It's, you know, you're in the country, but all of a sudden you're transported within the countryside. I'm thinking of like the Royal Horticultural Society in England or Powell Gardens or some of the ones down in the south where they're just out in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden, it is just, there's something really amazing and transporting. It's like going on vacation in a day.
It is. And, you know, you go like up to Kansas City to Powell and you just see this splendor they've created in the context of their natural environs. And that's very much what we will have. We have it already on a small scale, but yes, it's just something to behold.
And for people who want to just get out and see the site, I think that's very important, too,
yes.
for getting a sense of what the project's about. You're open every Saturday, and if you know you have a fairly cool or not incredibly hot day, just go out and take a hike, right?
Yeah, we're open 9 to 4 on Saturdays through October. We close in the winter for now because of heating our visitor center. But we have a program every week, and on the hot days we try to do something to keep you indoors. Our visitor center has air conditioning, and so like we're going to do in 2 weeks, two Saturdays, we're going to do a terrarium building for families and children. And we did that last year in one of the hot weekends, and it was a big success. 2 weeks ago we built toad abodes. We had kids come and build those, and I was there. We must have built 20 of them, and it was a lot of fun. So we have activities for the hot weather we get here every now and then, although it's been nice not to have as much of it lately.
It sure has been.
Yeah.
Well, it makes us think about gardening, too. Actually,
absolutely.
Gardening in the summer. Anyway, Todd, we wish you great success, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about the developments of the gardens here in the next year or so.
Absolutely.
And we look forward to seeing a thriving botanic garden in the community. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Todd Lazang is the president and CEO of the newly renamed Tulsa Botanic Gardens, which are located about a mile and a half from the intersection of North 53rd West Avenue and 43rd Street North. The gardens are currently open on Saturday. For more information about their programming, events, and more about the master plan, you can visit their website at tulsabotanic.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just look for Studio Tulsa and you can search our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.